Well, I just want everybody out there to go and text your partner right now and be like, you're hot, or I miss you, or like,
I can't wait to stick my finger in your what? What's happening?
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez, and my co-host is Christy Matthews. You are listening to part two of an interview we did with psychotherapist, couples therapist, and sex therapist, Dr. Magdalena Fossey. And this episode is all about sexy time. No, it's about sex and how to have a healthy relationship with your partner with regard to communicating your expectations about sex. So yes, you are probably in the middle of planning your wedding, but have you talked about sex with your partner? Like, have you had a conversation? Because you should. You should have an ongoing conversation, and you should make it in a way that it's comfortable for the both of you. So here is part two of our interview with Dr. Magdalena Fossey.
So going into this one, I just want to say that if you are listening to this and there are children with you and they can hear this, you might want to pause and come back to it later, because we're going to be talking about some stuff. Okay, so I think a lot of people have problems talking about sex, right? And problems talking about it to their partner, which is crazy, but it's true. I know me... I've been with my husband almost 22 years. I didn't really have conversations with him in the beginning. I mean, we did it all the time. We were young. We were in our 20s. So
you had conversations with your
thing.
Body.
Had conversations with our bodies, yes. But I think now, like, it's important to have check-ins and converse about it. And so I'm really looking forward to learning something here today. Do people come to you to be proactive in this as well, or is it usually when there's a problem?
Once again, both, but more typically when there is a problem. So as an observation, just think about, like, when there is a talk about sex, what do you notice? You know, like when people are, you know, you hear somebody talking about sex, let's say at a restaurant, or, you know, some, you know, you overhear. You probably would notice that they are joking and laughing, or they are whispering. Mm-hmm. That's how sex conversations happen for most of the time. Whispering, because it's a taboo. We are not used to talking about it openly. To use the language that it's, direct language feels so clinical. Otherwise, the language that it's used in joking, it's either, you know, cross or
lewd.
Yes, exactly. But that's, if that's the prevailing atmosphere of how to talk about sex. Now, when two people who are genuinely loving each other are supposed to talk about, like, listen, this works for me, this doesn't work for me, can I have more of this, can I have less of that, suddenly they feel extremely, not always extremely, but often, shy, vulnerable, and thinking that they are asking for something unreasonable, or the other person will be judging, will be mad, and the conversation stops. So they may be some attempt, like, you know, a blip, and then they drop it. So the difference I experience as a so-called regular therapist and a sex therapist, that when people seek me out is they know that I am a certified sex therapist and they put it immediately on the table. So it's right there and then we start talking about it immediately.
It's a safe space.
Safe space. Yeah. And the sense that they can name it, that it will be accepted. And it is. And I'm very direct. I tell people up front that I will be talking about sexuality in detail and using explicit terms. And since you said, you know,
put your kids away.
put your kids away. So, yeah. So I talk about penises, about vaginas, about clitoris, about vulva. Many people don't even know what a vulva is. And what is vulva? Michelle just asked, what is vulva?
There's a person right there who doesn't know.
There's, yes. Do you want to make a guess?
No.
No, she says no. Okay.
I think I know only because I try to use all the terms with my sons, like all mm-hmm. the real words. It's been like a real focus of mine, especially here in the Bible Belt of Texas. I'm trying to do my part. But I thought there was a difference between vagina and vulva in that one is the whole, like the entire area, maybe like what your, everything your pubic hair would cover, like the larger area. And then one of them is the term for the more specific, like smaller area where the actual functions happen. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to
confuse
the
two. Yes, that's about right.
Okay.
It's like vulva, it's everything.
Okay.
So it's the genital organ, it's as a whole. So basically, you know, there are so many organs that go into it. And vagina, it's vagina. It's vaginal opening and a vaginal canal.
Got it.
And but most pleasurable, most sensation-rich area of the female genitals, it's clitoris. But it's also, clitoris is much bigger than what we think about it is. And clitoris has twice as many nerve endings than the penis had. Just think about it. Twice as many nerve endings. And then here we are immediately touching one of the concepts in sexuality, or not even a concept, the reality in sexuality, that there is a myth, prevailing myth, that somehow women are supposed to reach vaginal orgasms and not only clitoral orgasms, and that's a sign of you know, more mature sexuality. That's actually a legacy of Freud, one of the I would say more detrimental legacies of Sigmund Freud, and who believed that clitoral orgasm was immature and only vaginal orgasm was mature. And now it creates havoc for so many couples, for so many relationships, because both women and men think that something is wrong with them. Mm-hmm. That women think that, well, I should be having vaginal orgasms, and the guy's thinking like, well, what's wrong with her?
Mm-hmm. I'm doing and everything I should, and she's still...
Yes, nothing is wrong. Why would you expect? You know, it's sort of, again, here's an example of me being very direct with my patients, you know, and now with you. So no guy would expect to have a fabulous orgasm by having his balls stimulated. He will be like, well, move on, get away. You know, that's great, but, you know, move on to the place that where it actually feels good.
Mm.
So, you know, so that's an example of conversations I have with people. It's education. It's using factual knowledge to dispel certain myths that people have. And it's not about assumptions or expectations. Yeah, it's assumptions, but not expectations, that something should be a certain way when it cannot be that way. It can be, but it's, you know, vaginal orgasms do occur. Many women are capable of them, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually very common, though, that you can have an orgasm just vaginally, right?
Well, clitoral ability to have clitoral orgasms, it's something that most women can experience, can achieve. Vaginal orgasms, it's true for a number of women, but not all. And women's sexuality is extremely complex and fascinating. You know, so we can have multiple orgasms, which men not really can. You know, they can have, maybe have repeated orgasms, but it's not the same as women's multiple orgasms. And so, but again, like even the fact that we're talking about vaginal orgasms here now, so it's like it says something about how the expectations about it are present in our culture. So if it was a couple in my office and we started talking about it, that would be immediately apparent, like, oh, what are we, there is a problem. But the problem is like it's maybe your expectations, maybe how you're approaching it is causing the difficulty for you. And sometimes accepting the factual reality is hard, but it's also liberating. And so that's just one of the examples. There are so many others. Like, for example, how now let's talk a little about men. So men, when they grow older, their erections change, but their expectation, how their erections should feel, don't. So they tend to compare themselves to their younger selves. So to when they were in their 20s, and so late teens or early 20s. And now both men and women might have expectations that a guy should have immediate and very hard erections. As one of sex researchers remarked in about male sexuality, and he said, like, it's in a young man, erections are hard as rock or rock hard. But it's not the case as men get older. And I'm not talking about advanced age. It's like there are certain changes happening. And but then the expectation that it should work, should appear a certain way, can create a lot of disappointments and then a lot of upsets for a couple, because then women feel rejected. Mm. You know, the guys doesn't get a hard on immediately. So it's like, you are not attracted to me. And so they might withdraw and then think like, well, you know, he's not interested in me. And then a guy notices it and he panics. And then the moment he panics, his ability to actually feel aroused and then, you know, present goes down. You know, panic and erection, they just don't go hand in hand. So, okay, I jumped into all the specifics now. So let me bring it back to Misha.
Sorry. No, I'm already learning so much. okay, so let's go back to our questions here.
Well, can I ask one question? I guess it's more of a context question, because as we're, so not as specific about sex, but more about like your accent, Magdalena, is not a Boston accent. And I get the impression, and just with what I'm reading and listening to, that America's culture around sex, which you mentioned in the first episode, between like we're kind of inundated with it, but we also don't really truly learn much about it. But I've also heard, you know, people from France or other countries say, and I'm not sure exactly where you're from or how much you want to talk about it, but I'm wondering if we have sort of like a puritanical, like that couples might have a hard time talking about sex because of the shame, not just that they feel about their own bodies, but just like how embarrassing or shameful or weird it feels like to even say the words out loud. And if that came from just the way, you know, America is, and maybe specifically you being from, I don't know how long you've lived here, but is there a way to compare like what French 30-year-old women think versus what we think, and what's going on with our country and the way it's so stifled here?
My accent to some people sounds French, but I'm not French.
Oh, I just named them because they seem French women.
I know, but it's because that's the association with French women and sexuality.
Right.
But yes, it's people talk more about sexuality, more openly generally in Europe. So my accent, yes, I can say it. It's a mixture of two languages. It's Polish and Norwegian.
Okay.
And I would guess that many of my clients, they find it more comfortable to talk to me because they hear my accent.
Interesting.
So they think like, oh, we can talk about it more freely. She's from somewhere. She's European, whatever.
Yeah.
And Christy, the point you are making, it's absolutely right. There is so much stigma about, talking about sex and shame. And shame is an interesting emotion, because shame and guilt are different in the sense that guilt is about, oh, I did something wrong. I need to learn from it. I need to make a repair. I need to make sure not to repeat it. Shame is like a whole person emotion. Something is wrong with me. Not that I did something wrong. Something is wrong with me.
Ah.
I should be, I'm ashamed of something. I'm ashamed of myself. I'm ashamed of feeling certain ways sexually. I'm ashamed of feeling things in my body. I'm ashamed of pleasure. I'm ashamed of masturbating. I'm ashamed of you name it. And there is no language of normalcy. Back to what we mentioned in the previous episode, sex education in schools, pregnancy and STDs.
Mm-hmm.
And no pleasure, and then also, if there is mentioning of masturbation, that's something what people do, but not why. And I'm a huge proponent of masturbation. It's a way to learn your own body. When people get married, or start having sex, there is often expectation, that's true, more specifically for women, that the man they are with will know their bodies better than they know it themselves.
Mm.
That the guy will be able to play your body like an instrument, and that he's supposed to know, all these secret spots, where to touch, and then to bring you to ecstasy. The guy has no guy has a female body. He doesn't know. He knows how to touch himself. He hasn't learned how to touch a woman, from reading a manual. It also comes from experience. And then also that's where an interaction between men and women, we're talking about heterosexual couples, because that's more relevant, because lesbian couples, women, they know their bodies more. I'm not saying that they are immediately much more comfortable, not necessarily, but then it's a different learning curve.
Mm.
But then for heterosexual couples to have enjoyable sex, so for women to actually be comfortable with their own bodies, and I'm not talking just about body image, but actually the comfort of touching yourself and knowing, oh, that's how I respond to my own touch. It's an information that can help the man they love to actually teach him, that's if you touch me this way. And positive feedback, it's essential. People often give feedback and assume that that's constructive, but if feedback is said, well, don't touch me this way, not here, no, move that, that's not the information that is actually helping the guy to know what he's doing. It's the feedback which is positive, and in a moment, it's not complicated, it's actually very simple. It's just saying, oh, that feels great. Oh, what you are doing right now, yes, more of that.
Mm.
That's the feedback that it's registered in, not only in a cognitive way, but also in a visceral way, because if the guy is actually touching you, he now, again, unconsciously, is processing it. So it's conscious and unconscious processing combined.
And is it true that men respond to, that's almost like stroking, no pun intended, but it's almost like stroking their ego a little bit in the moment if you're saying like, yes, that's the spot, you got it, you are awesome because you found it,
mm-hmm.
That makes them, that turns them on, or turns, could turn your partner on.
Yes, and the other way around as well. Because if a woman is, you know, if a guy is giving feedback to a mm-hmm. woman and it's like, wow, that's great. Yes, yes. You know, it feels good.
Yeah.
Our ability to be aroused by our partner's pleasure.
Right.
It's significant.
Through that affirmation.
It's a significant aspect. Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely.
Is there a way that women specifically respond to, I guess, the feeling of being desired that in turn turns us on, essentially? I guess I mentioned women more than men because I know in some other ways men are more visual, or they might, certain things might turn a man on that don't really interest a woman, but I don't know a single female friend that isn't turned on when we know that the object, that we are an object of desire in that moment. Is there something to that?
Yes. Being an object of desire is a turn on in itself. And women's desire and arousal are two different things. For men, arousal and desire go more hand in hand. It's more complex than that, but then compared to women, it's still far more closely related. So a guy, if he's aroused, he's already desiring. If he's desiring you, he's already typically aroused.
Yes, because that's how it works mechanically. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Well, actually, the way we know that it's not one and the same thing, even for men, is it came with Viagra. Suddenly with the prevalence of Viagra and with the reality of how so many men actually don't refill their prescriptions for Viagra. And because it's Viagra is allowing for erections, but it doesn't mean that men are actually desiring, that they are willing, that they want mm-hmm. to have sex. They just have a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's the beginning of, you know, of learning something profound about male sexuality as well. But for women, desire, you know, there is spontaneous desire. And, you know, that's what most women can recognize, you know, when there is a new relationship, when then they feel so horny, there is their partner, they are so hot for him. And then so the spontaneous desire does occur. But for women, especially long-term relationships, arousal is the key. So actually engaging in activity or reading maybe some erotic stories. Mm-hmm. So basically things that lead to this, to arousal, leads to desire. And so that also another of misconceptions for couples, because guys expect women to operate pretty much the same way as they do, meaning that arousal and desire co-occur. And so they women to respond immediately. So if a guy gets a hard-on and then he's ready, so they think that the woman should do, you know, the same. Mm-hmm. That he's ready, so, you know, 5 seconds or foreplay should be enough for her to be at the same
right.
level. And then Michelle is just laughing close to me. And
yeah.
I think I almost want to give you the microphone to give voice to your laughter.
Can I ask you, I mean, obviously we just got right into this topic and it's very easy to talk to you about, but those listening who are getting married, or even there's people that are already married listening, mm-hmm. vendors or people who aren't even getting married, but how do you sit down with your partner and say, okay, let's plan on spending the rest of our lives together, but here's what I want to happen. And what do you want to happen? Like, what's a good way of doing that? And is there supposed to be a specific number of times a week that you should have sex?
And do hand jobs count? Because sometimes that's all I have in me some weeks.
I'm so glad you are asking about it, both of these questions. So the first question, Michelle's question, like, how often should people have sex? It's something I hear over and over again. And anything that starts with a should, it's already an indicator of something that is more like a chore or an obligation. I should go to the gym. How often should people have sex? That speaks to like, we need to do it. I don't really feel like doing it. I don't want to do it. Nobody wants to have lousy sex. So when people talk about frequency, how often it should happen, the answer is not how many times. The answer is more, what would make you interested in having sex? How do you want sex to feel? That would actually not be a question like, 2 weeks has gone by, we should do it. But more like, what are we doing together? How can we bring each other to a place of more connection, emotional connection, intimate connection, physical connection, sexual connection? The answer to the question, how often do people, what's normal sex? That's another question. It's tired. Normal sex is a tired sex.
At night.
Yes.
Fridays, because you don't have to get up early. Then it's just easy. All signs point to you might as well.
Exactly.
So exactly. Your advice when you talk about it then is to more talk about what sets the scene a little bit, like not necessarily like light a candle and I like it when you do this, but mm-hmm. also like when we spend time together or we have a date night or I get to, I don't know, see you kiss me in the morning before you leave for work, that actually makes me more, I think about you more, and so when you come home from work I'm more excited to see you and I'm excited for the kids to go to bed. So it is like planting mm-hmm. the little seeds along the way that
yes.
lead to more successful sexy time for both of us in that head space, because once we're in the head
absolutely.
Space the body part is pretty easy
yes.
to do.
Yeah, brain is the biggest sexual organ, but it needs to be engaged with sexual thoughts with the anticipation. That's what happens in dating when people are going on a date and there is an anticipation that starts oftentimes days in advance or definitely the day of. Just remember your own dating experiences, like just like thinking about, what we are going to do, where are we going to go, what am I going to wear? That's all anticipation and preparation, mental preparation, and the body does its part. For long-term couples, it's hard to recreate novelty, but actually having enough time and not only like for sex but also this anticipation, it's still relevant. The best comparison is to dining, and I don't mean just eating a dinner but like actually a gourmet dining experience. If you go to a restaurant and then a restaurant that you've been really dying to go to, three star, let's say, and then you already have expectations about it. You are thinking about like what you are going to wear. You are not going to just wear jeans and then flip flops, and then you are going to dress up. And then you set aside time, you booked a table, and when once you get there, you actually are focused on enjoying what's happening. Yeah. Having a drink, appetizer, not rushing from one course to the next, like, let's be done with it, let's pay the bill, let's get out of here.
I see what you're doing.
And yes, one of my clients actually told me, like, what is it with you sex therapists? You all talk about food as a comparison, because actually it's helpful comparison. Mm-hmm. So the dining experience compared to going to a diner, you have very different expectations. And then, back to like, how often should people have sex? What's normal sex? Well, it's probably like a diner sex. What most people want is a dining experience. It's a gourmet dining experience. But the gourmet dining experience, gourmet sex experience is not going to happen without setting aside some time, making yourself more, mentally prepared. Some people text throughout the day, sexting, so build up energy. That's a good way of doing it. If it's the end of the day and then you are exhausted, well, it's probably not going to feel that great. Because you just like probably your energy is going towards sleeping. I just want to sleep. And you mentioned a candle. Yeah. You know, doing something that actually sets the ambience, that helps. You know, that's also like what if you go to a restaurant and you expect the table to look nice. You expect the ambience to be a certain way. And, you know, and then going to the bedroom where, you know, most sex happens, not always, but then, you know, that's the tired sex typically. Sex happening elsewhere in your on your dining table or in other rooms of your house, it's probably less tired sex. And but all these elements, they are small, but they actually are relevant. Most couples, you know, long-term couples, not necessarily just getting married, but long-term relationships, people discovered what works. So they figure out how to get each other off most efficiently and they go for it. But that also what starts killing the desire to have sex. Routines are great when it comes to efficiency in the morning, when you try to get out of the house, to get everything done so you are ready for the day. The same kind of efficiency when it comes to sex, it's a killer. It's a turn off eventually. It's like, oh, okay, it works, but we just go all through this, you know?
So it's like the it's putting work and effort and going to a fine dining restaurant. It's you don't do that all the time.
It's special,
right? And it's expensive.
I love how you said anticipation is key too, because sometimes that's the best part of something special, like eating out at a nice restaurant, is talking about it ahead of time, or looking up the menu, or asking your friends, like, you know, what if they've been and who the best waiter is, and I mean. Lance, my husband and I are both restaurant people in our careers, or have been. So we eat out a lot, and there's a lot of diner food or family restaurants in between the times we really like go big. But we can talk about that for weeks ahead of time, like looking forward to it. And that anticipation almost is like an aphrodisiac, I guess. And on a smaller scale, you know, a kiss in the morning does make me anticipate in a good way when he gets home from work at the end of the day. And it's a little thing, but it just sets the anticipation in a, you know, optimistic, happy way. So I'm already kind of halfway there for sexy time.
Sexy time.
Well, I was going to say that's important when you're just starting off your relationship, and also when you're 10 years, 20 years in. So for our listeners that aren't married yet.
Magdalena, do you think it's a good idea for partners to share their fantasies with one another?
Another excellent question. Fantasies are really important. It's a choice whether to share them or not. It can be enriching, but also it can be maybe diminishing the power of them. So, especially when couples try to role play the fantasies, it's almost never as rewarding as the fantasy itself. In a fantasy, you are a director and you are the actor, or they are actors and they are doing exactly what you want them to do. That's the power of fantasies. So sharing some fantasies can be triggering, but then fantasies have a meaning about some needs that might not have anything to do with sex, but that's not apparent. So that's another huge topic, by the way. So I would say, like, you know, it's up to you. It's up to the couple, because they can share fantasies. And but also, like, if you feel triggered, don't assume that your partner is trying to betray you, that your partner is interested in something incredibly kinky that you had no idea about, that your partner is a pervert. Absolutely not. Again, the meaning of fantasies is about some often emotional needs. So they are typically in that direction. I don't have to worry about, you know, my partner. I already know that my partner is aroused, so I can just enjoy it. So allow yourself to fantasize. There is nothing wrong with that. On the contrary, it's enriching, especially in long-term relationships. And whatever choice you make about sharing them or not, it's, you know, so it's, again, it's more like if you realize that your partner's fantasy is like in some ways upsetting for you to hear, there is probably a very different meaning to this fantasy than what you assume.
How would you recommend a couple research and finding a sex therapist?
What you spelled at the beginning of the previous episode, AASECT, so ASECT, it's an organization that it's certifying sex therapists and educators and counselors. So it stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors and Therapists, ASECT.org. And they have listings of professionals, certified sex therapists around the country. So you can go there and look up by region. There are people who practice sex therapy without being certified, and it's there is no requirement that in order to provide services within sex therapy that you need to be certified. But if you go to ASEC that look at people listed there, you know that you will be working with a professional who has who adheres to the code of conduct, very strict code of ethics around sexuality, and that this person is knowledgeable. So there is plenty of reassurance of looking professionals this way. Another place to look at, it's STAR, so it's S-S-T-A-R-T-I-R, Society for Sex Therapy and Research. And so all of, you know, these links will be on your website. And similarly to ASECT, you can find professionals in your area. So anyone who is a part of STAR, it's also extremely knowledgeable sex researcher or therapist. So these are two main ways. You can also talk, you know, if you are already seeing a therapist, they might actually be more open to talking about sex than you imagine. Mm-hmm. So bring it up. If they feel that, you know, that's not quite my area of expertise, they will tell you. Because people are often reluctant to to bring it up and then think like, well, you know, it's back to shame. It's like, yeah, I don't know, that might be complicated and I don't want to put her on or him on spot. It's, you know, if they are, if the therapist is uncomfortable, you know, is feel that they cannot help, that they will refer you. And I sometimes with my own clients, even if I'm a sex therapist and people know that, so sometimes they will look at me and say like, is it too much information? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's not. So ask.
Okay, that's good advice.
Great. Do insurances pay for?
So sex therapy, it's not any different from regular therapy. The diagnosis codes that I would use is still pretty much the diagnosis codes that I might use for other problems, like say anxiety, you know, or depression, whatever, it's relevant. So insurance is not going to deny payments for sex therapy per se, but whether a therapist is taking insurance, that's a different issue. So that's, you know, that's something that you will have to ask the practitioner directly.
Any other questions?
So many questions, but I'm actually having trouble trying to like funnel them through the point of the podcast and being able to share this with, you know, our listeners and for the purpose of the podcast.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time. And your website, right, is how people would find you?
Mm-hmm. It's drfauci@drfauci.com. So DR like doctor, Fauci, F like Frank, O, S like Sam, S like Sam, E.com.
Fauci. All those links will be on our website as well.
As always, if anybody listening needs to get in touch or ask us questions,
You can email us thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter, TBWP Podcast, and Facebook. We have Instagram coming up, so we'll keep you posted on that. And again, all the show notes, which are going to be chock full for these episodes with Dr. Fauci, are going to be on our thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com website, along with links to everything she talked about and to her own website. So please hit us up there if you want more information or to follow up with these episodes. So thank you again. We're so happy to be able to talk to you and just listen to all these gems.
All right. Happy planning, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye. You are doing a terrific job, Michelle and Christy. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Bye.